Support is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025, focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system. And by the team at Gelser Investment Management, focused on individuals and families, helping to build, manage, preserve, and transfer wealth for generations, commemorating 45 years in business. Gelser.
The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today, we present James Guyette, President and Chief Executive Officer of Rolls-Royce North America.
I suspect that everyone in this room today would agree that Rolls-Royce is one of the most famous names in engineering history. A company with a history that began on the ground quickly took to the skies, forming the foundation of one of today's leaders in the aerospace industry. But many may not be aware just how important it is to the economy of the state of Indiana. The company has a dozen facilities in our state, employing more than 4,600 workers in the Indianapolis area alone. So it's more than appropriate that we should welcome to our podium today the President and Chief Executive Officer of Rolls-Royce North America, a post Jim Guyette has held since 1997. Mr. Guyette comes to us today from the American headquarters in Reston, Virginia. There he manages nearly 9,300 workers in 66 locations throughout the U.S. and Canada. And again, I might point out that 4,600 figure to you. Clearly, the bulk of those are right here in Indiana. Before joining Rolls-Royce, our speaker enjoyed a 28-year career with United Airlines, serving in several senior positions. One of his accomplishments was serving as a member of the team that designed, developed, and launched the Boeing 777, for which he earned the Aviation Week and Space Technology Laurels Award. He remains active in several organizations related to the aerospace industry and is a member of the board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Smithsonian Institution. He's also on the board of directors of Private Bank and Trust of Chicago, a top 100 bank in the U.S. He's a board member of Priceline.com, with which I'm sure you're familiar. And you'll be pleased to know that he is on the National Board of Advisors for the Idle George Museum of American Indians and Western Art, just down the street from us. Before turning over the podium to our speaker, Jim Guyette, a man who plays a key role in maintaining Indianapolis' role as a leader in the manufacturing and aviation industry.
Deborah, thank you very much for the warm and generous introduction. It really is an honor to be here with you, and I'm delighted to have such a rather large audience, much larger than I had anticipated. I still maintain a membership in the Economic Club of Chicago, and I know if I went there, I wouldn't get this big a crowd. So thank you for being here, and thank you for allowing me to spend a few moments with you. I'd like to touch on just three things today. Three things. First, a proper introduction of Rolls-Royce. You kind of have that, but I'd like to fill in a few gaps. Secondly, spend a little bit of time about geographical and corporate competitiveness. What we can do, what we all can do to keep pace in this ever-changing world. And then finally, test a little theory with you on the importance of advanced manufacturing in this economy and any economy. The question, does it matter? That's the question. Well, back to Rolls-Royce, headquartered in London, publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange. You saw all of the power applications for land, sea, and air, and we've been doing this for well over 100 years. We're global. A third of our revenue comes from the Americas, a third from Europe and Africa, a third from Asia Pacific. And I would point out that Indianapolis is directly connected to the global economy via lots of places, but certainly through Rolls-Royce. We're global. Our customers, they're in the civil and defense aerospace markets, marine, naval, offshore, merchant, energy markets, oil, gas, power generation, nuclear. It's a wide portfolio. Now, we don't just make power, but efficient and reliable power. Our vision, and by the way, this is probably the very first time this vision statement has been publicly introduced. It's something that we have been working on for a good number of months. In fact, we'll be rolling it out to our employees in January. Our vision, better power for a changing world. I ask you to think about that. It's simple, but I think in many ways profound and reflects our focus on placing the customer at the very heart of our company. People rely on us every day to deliver power when it's most needed. For example, the power to lift soldiers from harm's way in combat. Therefore, it leads to our values. Our value statement, trusted to deliver excellence. It's a very high standard, one that is a serious statement, one we have to live up to every day. When you're sitting on the seat, that's airplane seat, and you're ready for takeoff, you really want to make sure that when you look out the window, that the power that is provided for a safe takeoff and a calm flight is going to be reliable. So we are trusted to deliver excellence. Now, you may not know when you climb aboard the airplane what engine is on the wing, but I think you'll probably know the manufacturer, and most of those manufacturers are our customers: Boeing, Airbus, Embraer, Gulfstream, Bombardier, Bell, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, and the list goes on. And then, of course, there is the U.S. Department of Defense, our largest defense customer in the world. Since many of our customers are here, North America is a very important region for Rolls-Royce. We have 9,300 people on this continent, and half of them live right here in Indiana. Like most companies, Rolls-Royce PLC includes a board of directors. However, with the importance of North America, we also have a regional board, a team of very talented, well-respected people that help us prioritize our business strategies. On the screen, hopefully, we have leaders of prominence in national security and international business. A former chief of staff of the United States Air Force, also the current CEO of a defense company called SAIC. A former ambassador and head of the U.S. Customs. A former chief of naval operations, the highest uniform job in the U.S. Navy. A former undersecretary of defense, and you will see her quoted quite liberally in the newspapers on defense issues, and you may have seen her name floated a good number of times as a possible candidate for Secretary of Defense. And then also a former Lieutenant General of the Marine Corps. He ran all of Marine Aviation. Very serious people. Now, I've been with Rolls-Royce since 1997, as Deborah mentioned. I've had the pleasure of working with many talented individuals, and I'd like to take a moment to recognize two of them. First, this person was the original chairman of our North America board, and he's with us in the audience today, a hometown hero, George Mickelson, founder of Ambassador and ATA. He was the chairman after Rolls-Royce purchased the Allison Gas Turbine Company in 1995. He was instrumental in helping us navigate those early years to integrate our business. George, would you please stand and be recognized? George Mickelson. Muriel, you've got to stand and take a bow. Muriel's here with him. Great friends of Rolls-Royce and great friends of ours. And I really believe Indianapolis is very fortunate to have them as an integral part of this community. Also with us, the leader of the Allison Engine Company when Rolls-Royce purchased it. Now retired, Mike Hudson was president and CEO of Rolls-Royce Allison and our former vice chairman. He had a personal hand in the development of many of the products that you saw on the screen. And as I think you know, Mike also has been deeply involved in civic matters. Mike, his wife Karen, please stand and be recognized. I should tell you, they're both on fixed incomes. When I called for the invitation, they quickly said yes. They had to go find suits and ties, but even for a speech for me, they would come for a free meal. You know, it's also great to have a couple of friends in the audience. You know, you may need a little support. So, delighted to have the hometown heroes right up here in the front. Now, let me shift. I'd mentioned three things. We've got Rolls-Royce out of the way. I'd really like to shift to my second topic. It's about being competitive in a global economy. And I think that's really something important to all of us. Well, let's face it. Our desire to compete is embedded in our human psyche. Businesses compete against each other ferociously. Cities, states, and nations compete in many ways, including economically. The question I ask is, can we compete? Can America compete? Competition from all corners of the earth is getting increasingly more difficult. Our company, it makes investments in many places: Germany, Singapore, Brazil, UK. We have an order book of over $110 billion. It's going to require additional advanced manufacturing capability. Well, how about investing in America? Last year, I had the honor of being invited to the White House for a business forum to discuss international investment in the U.S. My statement to President Obama was really simple. The United States invented the playbook of how to compete, and we've got all of the necessary tools. We need to take them out. We need to apply them as partners working together to create jobs. We know how to do this. We created the playbook. Now, as part of my role at Rolls-Royce, I get to travel to many places around the world. So I think I may have a basis to make comparisons. Here are some of my observations about the tools that Indiana applies to make itself competitive. First, Indiana has the good fortune of being prepared for competition. The state has visionary leadership. Both past and present leaders understand that you aren't going to just compete against other states. You're really going to be competing against the world. You're working hard to keep Indiana business friendly in a state that many companies regard as a prime choice for relocation and expansion. Now, I have a list, my list of three critical tools. First, education, education, education. Continue to invest in it. Every person, every community, at every level. We cannot become complacent. It is fundamental to our future. We need a strong K through 12 with a basis of STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. That's important to us as a nation and to you as a state. You may not know this, but we employ 1,500 engineers here, right in Indiana, half of them educated at Purdue. We also have a highly trained technical workforce for advanced manufacturing. They, too, require a basis of education. Education, I can't stress it enough. I also mentioned K through 12, where it all starts. And I think you had the pleasure of seeing that over here on the front row over in the corner, we've got Decatur Central High School. Not only do we have the RoboHawks, the Robotics Club, but we also have some other impressive students that have come along. They've taken a day out of their school break to learn more about business, more about advanced manufacturing. So yes, STEM, it's alive and well. One look in their eyes, and I had an opportunity to chat with them before we started, and you can see excitement, and you also can see our future. I'd like to ask if the RoboHawks, the other students, their two teachers, Rob Weisbach, Pete Berg, would please stand and be recognized. Our future. AP Physics, AP Calculus. This is serious talent. And before some of you employers think you're going to get your hooks into them, I've got first rights of refusal on all eight. They're coming to work at Rolls-Royce. I think we ought to acknowledge maybe one other thing, and that is the importance of teachers, of good teachers. In everyone's life, everyone at this in this room, we have been influenced by good teachers. Good teachers change lives. So I'd like to ask for another round of applause for Rob and Pete and all of the good teachers for everything that they do. So Rob, Pete, and all the good teachers. Next on my list of critical tools, investment in infrastructure. Indiana is the crossroads of America. This state has capitalized on that distinction, making the right investments in interstates, a world-class airport, even this convention center that accounts for a robust convention and tourism business. The city, a safe, livable downtown, a place where people want to visit or take in a cultural event, a Pacers or a Colts game. It's a downtown that employers like Rolls-Royce find attractive for its employees. This city is a place where people want to live. Don't discount that. It's really important. So don't take your foot off the pedal. Invest in infrastructure. Finally, the third tool. Indiana is a pro-business community. City and state leaders know that to attract business, you need business-friendly public policy. Again, don't underestimate the value of that. You've done some hard work. You have a very financially responsible government that operates in the black. Not everyone can say that. You also must be competitive in site selection and economic incentives. It's just the way the world works. You've got to be competitive. Now, Indiana has, I think, a very strong track record of attracting business. The differentiators, in my mind, for this state, they're fairly simple. Financially sound government, pro-business policies, an attractive city. Investments that will pay for themselves in the long run. Keep investing. Indiana has a vision, a long-term perspective, and leaders to bring those aspirations to life. Not all locales are so fortunate. All you have to do is look north of here, look west of here, and you know what I'm saying. Not everyone enjoys that good fortune. Well, let's shift back for a moment to Rolls-Royce. And I mentioned earlier that we continue to make investments, and investments in America. Let me take you to one of those that we made not too long ago near Richmond, Virginia. We call it Rolls-Royce Crosspoint. This is what advanced manufacturing looks like. Crosspoint is a hub of manufacturing excellence and innovation. It's built on a 1,000-acre greenfield site that will attract suppliers wanting to co-locate right next to us. Today, we're just opening our second factory with employment that will soon reach 300 jobs and over $300 million in investment. It's about highly skilled employees, and it's high tech. It's the most advanced manufacturing facility found anywhere. Now, that's not what makes our Crosspoint campus so special. Partnerships in people. Partnerships with the local community, government, and academic institutions are critical. The two top-tier universities that normally don't work side by side do so today, and they do so with us. And our people. We're investing heavily in training, but it's not just training. It's also collectively developing a highly participatory workforce. There is a buzz when you go into those factories. And I'm not talking about some machines humming away. I'm talking about people energy. There is a buzz. There is a difference in that workforce. So workforce development, important elements. Now, we've also formed an additional partnership at this site by creating something called CCAM, the Commonwealth Center for Advanced Manufacturing. It's an interesting concept. It's a unique collaboration between global industries, not just us, Canon, Siemens, Chromalloy, ourselves. We even have NASA as a part of this partnership. The state's flagship universities also are a part of this partnership. So what are we trying to do with all of this? By the way, this is up and running. This is not an aspiration. What we're attempting to do is transform research into real products that can be made on the factory floor, bridging the gap between science and value creation. Virginia has invested nearly $90 million in this partnership. Crosspoint, well, it's begun, and it's ready for more growth. President Obama visited Crosspoint last year, calling it a model for the future of manufacturing in America. And I, on that point, agree with the president. And a couple of other recent investments in America. This fall, we opened another $50 million investment, a second high-tech engine testing facility at the NASA Stennis Space Center in Mississippi. It's very impressive. This is where we do all of the testing, the outdoor testing for our newest engines. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner engine, when I was down there last, was on one test stand. On the other was the Airbus A350 XWB engine. This is an airplane that's only in test flight right now. It will be entering service here in another 18 months or so. So all leading edge, all very high tech. This is the only place in the world where Rolls-Royce does this kind of testing. Again, strong partnership played a key role in our decision to locate there and also to expand. Now, come on, I know what you're thinking. This is all kind of interesting, but what about Indiana? Am I right? Okay. All right, well, Indiana also has benefited from our growth. Our story here is a little different. Our factories over on Tibbs Avenue, they were built for the war effort. Temporary structures that took 4 months to construct and have lived long past their life expectancy. They are relics of the past that challenge us to be competitive in a world that is ever-changing. Leaking roofs, falling facades, very expensive to heat, costing us tens of millions of dollars each year to repair and keep up. So, we are investing here, moving to more modern facilities. 3 years ago, we opened a $12 million lift van factory near the airport. We build lift vans for the Lockheed Martin Joint Strike Fighter that you saw on the video. While this probably doesn't sound all that sexy, it is just as complex as a jet engine. And this technology, it was the differentiator. It is the reason why Boeing lost and Lockheed Martin won the Joint Strike Fighter contest. That technology. This world-class facility that you see on the screen applies the best in industry manufacturing principles. Another example. 2 months ago, we opened a new $42 million engine component manufacturing facility here. We leveraged our experience and technical know-how to win global business. I want to say it again, global business, to make these components here and export them around the world. This production could have gone anywhere. Indianapolis competed. It lowered its costs. It applied its engineering ingenuity, and it won. I hope what you've seen here are examples that may change your opinion on what advanced manufacturing looks like today. No longer dark and dingy, greasy, antediluvian factories. These are high-tech, clean, and automated facilities that require skilled people. I think we could probably link that back to my point on education. Require skilled people. And now, here's a little different kind of investment in Indianapolis. Last year, we consolidated over 2,500 personnel to a new $22 million downtown office complex. Our old facilities were outdated and beyond their life expectancy. They hindered our competitiveness. Now, this wasn't about simply moving from one building to another, one office to another. We introduced a new work style, a new way of working. We call it agile working environment, open spaces with few assigned desks. What this is all about? Cultural transformation, an effort to improve customer responsiveness and team interaction. It's all about collaboration. We've gained productivity. We've seen remarkable improvements with workforce satisfaction, efficiencies, and effectiveness. This campus, it fosters innovation and speeds response to customers. In all of these examples of new investment, our people are paramount. It's not just about buildings and machines. It's about creating a climate for success. I guess if there's one thing that I have learned in business, it is there is so much untapped power in the people that we employ. So we're spending a lot of time attempting to develop better climates for success. Our attention now turns here in Indianapolis to our aging Indianapolis factories. What are we going to do next? In order to compete, we're going to have to be making some critical decisions in the near term about what we do. We've made a start, but we've got more to do. And then there are more challenges, always more challenges in an ever-changing world. You see the news daily. You know how much uncertainty there is in Washington, particularly with our largest customer, the Department of Defense. Our Indianapolis products and services, that portfolio here, is heavily, heavily weighted toward defense programs. Defense budgets in the Western world continue to be reduced. Our defense customers, they're flying less. They're reducing or canceling programs. Many research programs have been eliminated. Unfortunately, our demand is coming down. Of course, we will adjust our customer to our customers' needs and manage our costs to ensure we remain a competitive and viable global defense supplier. We have to. It's a very important market for us, and we intend to compete. So, it is a rapidly changing, an extremely challenging world. Let me move on to another question. Do you think advanced manufacturing matters? Is it important to communities, communities like this? Well, no surprise, I believe it does matter. Advanced manufacturing is a powerful base. It's a very strong anchor for any economy. Facts. Why don't we start with a few facts? It's always good to have a couple of facts. Let's look at it from a global perspective, global GDP, advanced manufacturing. It accounts for 14% of employment. Now, hear this one. 70% of exports and 77% of private sector research and development. Let's move to the U.S. Durable goods manufacturing was the largest contributor to overall growth of the U.S. economy in this last year. It accounts for over 12% of our total U.S. GDP. And even more interesting, local facts. Rolls-Royce Indiana employees earn more than double the annual salaries of workers in other industries across this state. Double. Rolls-Royce supports more than 250 Indiana suppliers. Finally, what does this mean to this community? If you're like most employers, if you employ one person, that usually means there's another person that's employed somewhere in the community. It's called the multiplier effect. So, one for one. However, in our industry, it really is somewhat different. Because in our industry, when we employ one, the community adds an additional two. We double the multiplier effect. So, from my perspective, double salaries, double the multiplier effect, those are very, very powerful numbers. Advanced manufacturing breeds innovation and discovery. It creates real value. It leads to higher paying jobs and vibrant communities. But communities must invest to attract this kind of work. Investments that we've already discussed, infrastructure, business-friendly policies, education. But again, I can't overstate the importance of education. Values. Companies have values, communities have values. They're important. Again, ours, trusted to deliver excellence, words that can resonate for a community as well as they can for a company. Let me see if I can translate. Excellent workforce, trustworthy and financially reliable government, and a community that delivers on its promises, values. And I think these are values that this state aspires to and delivers upon. Indiana has the opportunity to help us provide better power for a changing world. Together, I believe, in fact, we can compete. There's a lot at stake. Global competition only continues to increase. Advanced manufacturing really matters. So I hope this afternoon you have a little clearer picture of who we are and what we do, what we all need to do to be competitive, and finally that advanced manufacturing is a key driver in the global and local economy. But before closing, I want to leave you with an impression of why we think our work matters. It's a recent story from NBC Nightly News covering the recent typhoon disaster in the Philippines.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
And now our update on this continuing and desperate situation in the Philippines. Tonight, the UN is out with their new estimate of the death toll, nearly 4,500 so far. Also tonight, some food and water and medical help is finally getting in, but it's not clear if it's reaching the hundreds of thousands who desperately need it.
And so the U.S. Marines are throwing everything they have at the problem, including the Osprey. It can fly like a plane, but take off or land like a helicopter, making it an ideal bridge between the aid that's come in and those who desperately need it. We rode along as the Ospreys made deliveries in hard-hit Guion, a town cut off since the storm hit. Tranquilo Motan worries that the aid may not get to the people who need it most. But as best we could tell, the shipment was secure. As the Ospreys continue to swoop from village to village, you can't help but wonder what would happen if they weren't here.
This was a three-minute segment. We've cut it down. Also in the story was the C-130J, the Osprey. Every one of those Osprey engines made right down the street on Tibbs Avenue. C-130J, right down the street, Tibbs Avenue. Indiana, you're a part of a global world, and I think it's more than just about economics. It's about what it is we do as human beings around the world. We all play a role in this. Indiana is connected to it. Ours, in our opinion, is an important mission. We are mission critical, an honor and a responsibility that we don't take lightly. So in closing, together, we are providing better power for a changing world. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jim. And as a reminder, please use the white cards on your table if you have a question for Jim, or tweet us at Economic Club IN. So let me start with this. You mentioned that Rolls-Royce is ever-changing for its customers, that your vision is better power for a changing world, and you mentioned that one of the drivers of change in your world is the Department of Defense and decreasing demand. What are the other drivers of change that you see that affect Rolls-Royce and really all of us?
Customers. Customers everywhere. We're all customers. What do customers want? Innovation, better product, lower costs. They're also looking for solutions to help them solve their problems. They're looking for ways to reduce their costs. They're looking for partners. This is not the world of 10 or 15 years ago when there were these relationships between suppliers that were, I'd call, contentious. It's a world, I think, of partners, and that's the way we're all going to have to survive and thrive. It's partnerships throughout the supply chain. It's partnership with government, its partnership with cities, locales, its partnerships with universities. And I think that customers are pushing us really hard, and we've got to respond. There's another thing that's out there that's a big driver. It's the developing world. The developing world wants to play a role in high-value manufacturing. They want to play a role in aerospace. And you know what? They're going to get there. Today, the Chinese have got a 100-seater airplane. Now, it may not be the most competitive thing on the planet at the moment, but it's a beginning. Look what's happened up in, look at Canada, Bombardier. It's really moving. It now has fielded not just regional jets, but has a series of airplanes, they're called the C series, that will take you up to 140 seats. How about down in Brazil, Embraer? They too are moving up the value chain. And they've just launched a military aircraft, a transport that is going to compete somewhere between the C-27 and the C-130J. So the advancing world is advancing. And I think it just says that we are going to have to, as a nation, get our act together and be partners with one another. We can't live, in my opinion, the way we have been living with the contentiousness that is holding us back. Partnerships is what's going to be required, in my view, for the future.
Thanks. We, not surprisingly, have gotten a number of questions about education. One of those, for example, is U.S. students rank, by the way, this is a question via Twitter, thank you very much, rank 36th in math and 28th in science globally. How do we make sure that Indiana's K through 12 kids have great teachers and can compete?
I don't know that I have an answer for that, other than to say I think it starts at home. I think it starts with parents. We just can't expect that the school system is going to do the entire job. I think it starts at home. It starts with preschool. It starts with early reading. And if there is any one inhibitor, at least that I'm aware of, that holds kids back, it's those that don't learn how to read proficiently early on. By the time they're in the second or third grade, they're lost. So early education, I think, is a part of it. Good teachers, I think, is fundamental to all of this. The right curriculums, the right encouragement, the right focus on the things that matter. How do we spend time in schools today? It's a question. I don't know the answer. I suspect it could be more productively. I suspect it could. I mentioned partnerships. Business is going to have to partner with education. We do today. We partner, let's just take Virginia. We partner with University of Virginia. We do it in their undergraduate program. We're deeply involved in their undergraduate program. We're involved in their science program. Same thing is true at Virginia Tech. Then we found that we needed to partner also with the community college system. It wasn't good enough just with the big research in universities. So we partnered there. And we've gone to government to say the curriculum isn't right. It probably worked in 1953, but what you're teaching is of zero value in today's world. And the state was quite responsive in Virginia. They came in and said, okay, well, what would it look like? What do you want it to look like? And we said, well, why don't we start with modern machine tools? Why don't we get students working on the future, not on something that happened three or four decades ago? And they've invested. We then found that that wasn't good enough. We had to get into high school. In fact, we brought on board two high school students this year, and hopefully we're going to be able to launch an apprenticeship program there, because we think that's what's missing from the education system. And we've even found that you have to get into the K through 8 to help a little bit in terms of what is really required in today's modern world. So I come back to, I don't know that there is one answer. If we think it is just pouring more money into the system, I think we've got the wrong answer. I think it's going to take a lot of hard human effort on many levels to improve our education system. My wife happens to be sitting here, and where do we spend our philanthropic time and money now on two things. But one, and the biggest right now, is education. We think our nation is falling behind. The questioner was quite right. We're behind. We got to do something about it.
You've just answered several people's questions along that line. Does the private sector need to get involved, and in what way? And clearly, Rolls-Royce has been so. We had a couple of questions as well. Thoughts on the arts in education, such as changing STEM to STEAM, adding the A for arts, a known catalyst for innovative and creative problem-solving thinking and skills. I guess the question is, to what extent is that going to be important to the future workforce, or even today's workforce?
I think it is. I think it's an essential part. I had dinner Monday night with the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. It's a big shipbuilder, Huntington Ingalls. It builds most of this nation's warships. And we spent a lot of time on education and going back and forth on our views. And he told me a story over dinner about a nephew that was an engineering student at Auburn. And the nephew sent him an email saying, "I'd like your advice. I think I'd like to have a second major." And I forget what area of engineering he was concentrating in. And he was suggesting that maybe he ought to have a second major in engineering. And the gentleman that I was dining with sent a text back saying, "Wrong. Wrong. If you're going to have a second major, go do something entirely different. Broaden yourself out. Take something, arts or business or something that can complement your engineering skills." And, you know, it really comes to another point as to what I think has happened to us in this nation. As companies have gotten big, we tend to bring people in and we tend to run them up verticals. And I think we lose a lot in the process, because when they get up to here, they haven't really had those experiences that are going to allow them to operate over a wide, wide span. And they don't have some of the communication skills that are so required, some of the personal interaction skills that are so necessary in leadership today. They don't have the perspective, a world perspective. And again, this is not to say that being a specialist is wrong, but I really believe to be a more effective specialist, the broader your education, the broader your perspective, the more effective you will be.
Thank you. We have time for one more, and we have two people who asked, what is the future of 3D manufacturing for businesses like Rolls-Royce?
3D manufacturing, just to make sure we're all on the same page, it's additive manufacturing. I think that in a business like ours, it's crucial. It's crucial that we perfect it. Because what it allows you to take a form, let me borrow your spoon, and basically create this object. You don't stamp it, you don't machine it, you simply layer continuous layers of material on it, and you end up with this shape. In a business like ours, you know, you start with a foundry, and then you start trimming and shaping, and you waste a lot of time and energy. It's very expensive. If we can all perfect additive manufacturing or 3D manufacturing, it's going to result in lighter materials, stronger materials, faster time to market, and lower expense. Now, there's a long time to get between the beginnings of this and our ability to be able to really do a lot of things with it. Jeff Immelt, who obviously runs GE, is a competitor. We had a cup of coffee this summer, and I was quizzing him on additive manufacturing. I said, "Jeff, I've seen you quoted, and you've been quoted as saying you think the potential could be as high as 30% of content within a jet engine." Now, we're a long way from that, but here is a thought leader in a very successful company, and unfortunately a competitor, that thinks that that is true. So I think there is something to this, and it's something that we, in fact, are investing in. We have to.
Thank you very much, Jim. Please have another round of applause.
Thank you.
thanks again so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We really appreciate it. Today's presentation will be broadcast on WFYI Public Radio 90.1 FM on Monday, January 6th at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and is also available for download at WFYI.org. Please join us next month on Thursday, January 16th, to hear from Arthur Brooks, president of the American Enterprise Institute. Be sure to purchase your tickets today to hear from a national expert well known for exploring the junctions among culture, economics, and politics. Information and tickets for this season's presenters can be found at economicclubofindiana.com. Thank you.
WFYI's Sam Clement follows up with James Guyett in this interview on topics such as the economy and education in Indianapolis, as well as the role of the private sector in public education.
You talked about Indianapolis and the role that it plays in kind of the global economy, especially Rolls-Royce's presence here. What is Indianapolis's and the work that's done at Rolls-Royce here doing at a global scale?
Indianapolis is connected to the global economy. It's a very important part of Rolls-Royce. Over half of our North American employees are here. And when you look at the products that we produce, I mean, these are highly engineered products, high-value manufactured products. You will find them all over the world, in armies and navies and airlines, on ships. These are products that matter, the C-130J, the B-22 Osprey, lift fans for the Joint Strike Fighter. Look at the naval warfare ships upon which we have our equipment. I mean, they're everywhere, all over, not only the free world, but the developing world.
You also talked about the multiplier effect specifically here in Indianapolis. What has made this city so important for the Rolls-Royce thriving in Indianapolis? What is it about the city?
We have the great fortune of not only a great partnership with the state, the city, local officials, but we have a very talented workforce. We have over 1,500 engineers here, and I think you can be very proud of the education system here in Indiana. Half of those engineers come from Purdue. Look at the kinds of jobs that we create. They're highly technical jobs. They require good education, good training, and people that come with good work ethics and great values.
So you talked about education quite a bit. Why have we seen such a drop-off in the success of American students in the STEM fields?
I don't know that I can answer why, but I know we can't tolerate where we're headed. We're going to have to do better, and it's going to take an investment on the part of all of us. And it starts with families. Parents are going to have to invest. School systems are going to have to invest. Those of us in the business community are going to have to invest. And then ultimately, students are going to have to invest. But it's a very, very competitive world. If we do not have a robust education system, we're going to fall behind.
What is the role of the private sector in that process?
I think it's a number of things. I think we have an obligation to define what is required of the education system. So what is it that we need to have productive employees in a global economy? And so it goes even beyond that. I think we have to work with educators. We've got to walk into, I think, all parts of the education system. If it's community colleges, all right, what's the curriculum? We also believe that there's a gap in the education system. And therefore, we're working right now to see if we can't begin an apprentice academy. Not here. We're looking at that in Virginia right now. But we think that we're going to have to invest everywhere. And it starts with K through 8, K through 12. Moving up through the high school, community colleges, and then into also the research universities. We've got to have the very best in scientists. STEM is crucial, and that's where we're falling behind.
You know, here Governor Pence is very focused on the two-year degrees and ensuring that everyone has at least some post-secondary education. How do you blend the need for a four-year degree with getting a two-year degree being something that maybe someone with a two-year degree could go to Rolls-Royce and work there? How do you get them the skills that are necessary to achieve larger-scale success?
We have a variety of different kinds of jobs requiring all kinds of different skills and professions. So if you are someone that comes with a high school education, very motivated, willing to work hard, you know, we can provide training. And my attitude is pretty simple. I select for attitude. I'm happy to train for skill. But if it's the wrong attitude, people don't come with the basics, we don't have room. We don't have a place. So come with a good foundation. Come with a good attitude. we can work with you. So, again, we bring people from a variety of different points out of society and make them a part of Rolls-Royce. We have lots of different kinds of jobs, not just one, many.
Does Rolls-Royce have any plans of investing in Indianapolis universities, IUPUI, Purdue? You talked about the work you do with Virginia and Virginia Tech. Any idea of coming here?
No, we work very, very closely with Purdue and the other institutions here. Virginia just happens to be a new relationship.
You announced the mission statement today. What does that mean to you, and how do you anticipate moving forward with that next year?
We spent a long time debating better power for a changing world. And one of the big debates was on the word better. Why not best? Because we really believe that even if you are the best, you've got to be better. And that's all about competition. We also recognize that the world is changing, and we better be in step with that changing world, and not just in step, we better be ahead of it. We've got to figure out ways to be better to get ahead of a changing world.
Do you feel that America has turned that corner from the recession?
As far as the economy is concerned, sure. Is it turned the corner? Yes. Are there a lot of positive signs? Yes. You look ahead, the economy probably only grows 2.4% next year. That's not enough to take a big dent out of unemployment. So, yes, it has stabilized. Housing market is better. Commercial real estate market is better. The slowest growth part or component of the economy right now is government spending.
We're seeing a scale back of wars, and I know a lot of the stuff that you guys do are military vehicles, response vehicles. What's the impact of scaling back on some of these engagements in terms of the business that you guys are able to do and your potential growth?
Well, I'd like to maybe pose a different question, that is defense budgets, because it's not just pullbacks that affects us. It's the top-line budget and how money is going to be spent. And throughout the Western world, defense budgets are reducing. There's just no question about that. And there are consequences to that. There have to be consequences to continually reducing budget. And it translates into less demand. And for us globally, our defense business is going to be in 2014 less than it was in 2013. So that means less work in factories. It means less engines, less spare engines, less parts, less components. And that ripples down through our supply chain.
Do we see any cutbacks here in Indianapolis?
Depends on budget. We are carefully looking at our plans as we speak, and we'll make our determination not in months, but in weeks.
You've been listening to James Guyette, President and Chief Executive Officer of Rolls-Royce North America, part of the 2013-2014 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. Next month at this time, join us for a presentation from Arthur C. Brooks, President, the American Enterprise Institute. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Radio in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us. I'm Don Hibschweiler.
Support is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.